let's take a look at our third case study. Boyce is a patient of Dr. Ramamoorthy. Doctors found a large polyp during a routine colonoscopy he had a few years ago. He didn't know much about laparoscopic surgery at the time, but Dr. Ramamoorthy went through the various options available to remove the polyp. We went to San Diego, California to meet with Boyce and Dr. Ramamoorthy.
For the last 26, 27 years, I've been a freelance videographer. And so normally I would be on the other side of the camera. Get a different frame and let me go right there. Okay, we're good. It's a little awkward to be over here. I've never actually done this before. After a while, you get more comfortable being able to talk to somebody and try to be able to, get a coherent thought out. Sorry, got distracted. I like to do a lot of walking. I travel with my wife. And I've become an avid lawn bowler. I got interested and involved in lawn bowling in 2005. The United States National Championships were held here in San Diego at the San Diego Lawn Bowling Club, and I've been bowling ever since.
That's better.
I went in for my annual physical 3 years ago. Everything's great. And he said, oh, and by the way, I scheduled your colonoscopy. My what? So I went in and made the appointment. What the doctor found at the time was a very large polyp and referred me then to Dr. Ramamoorthy.
Hi, boys.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good to see you again.
Yeah, good morning.
What are my options now?
Well, I think we certainly can still approach things using
one option was to just proceed with having the laparoscopic procedure and removing that colon section and be done with it. And that was the one I opted not for.
There's a new procedure called a laparoscopic assisted endoscopic polypectomy, where while the gastroenterologist is performing a polypectomy, the surgeon is there watching with the laparoscope to make sure that there's no full thickness, meaning through and through injury to the colon. And if there is, we're there as backup to repair it.
Good morning. How can I help you?
I have an appointment with Dr. Raymond Morton.
Okay.
When I went in for the one-year follow-up colonoscopy, I was pretty disappointed that the polyp had come back.
We knew we had tried the conservative approach. However, the polyp grew back. So at this point, we had to plan on removing that portion of his colon. So at this point, we offered Boyce a minimal invasive approach to his colon resection.
How about your pain?
Well,
it's my experience that the majority of patients are not aware of a minimal invasive approach to their procedure. Foremost in their mind is that they need to have an operation.
I just want to take a quick look at your incisions here. Any pain when
some people
press
are very
these?
Savvy. They've come in, they've looked on the internet, and they know what's available to them. But I would say the vast majority of patients that I see, I need to offer them that approach and talk to them about the risks and benefits. We certainly focus on all the short-term benefits, which is you're using less pain medication, maybe feel less pain, you're getting out of the hospital sooner, and you're returning to your regular activities sooner than when we used to do things with the traditional open approach. We've done the studies to show us that there's no disadvantage from a cancer standpoint in terms of curing their disease and performing an adequate, what we call, oncologic operation for them.
A lot of what I feel right here is a healing ridge.
Prior to Dr. Ramamoorthy's description of what a laparoscopic procedure was, I had no knowledge at all that there was this type of a procedure available. And given its description versus a general surgical procedure, it was a no-brainer to me that that's the way you'd need to go.
This appears to be healing just fine.
Patients recover so quickly from minimal invasive surgery that patients like Boyce are ready to return to their activities quickly. I had to hold Boyce back in terms of his activities to make sure he would heal properly.
I'm looking forward to getting back to lawn bowling on a more regular basis. But I think more than anything else, I'm actually really looking forward to that next colonoscopy. As strange as that might sound. I want to know a year from now or 2 years from now that everything is clean, everything is good, and I made the right decision.
So unfortunately, we tried an aggressive polypectomy to remove that tissue for Boyce, but it came back. But he was still a candidate for a minimal invasive approach to removing that section of his colon. What's different about him in comparison to the previous two patients is he's completely asymptomatic. So to take someone like that to surgery, you really want to minimize the effect that surgery has on them. And he's a very active gentleman, so getting him back to his quality of life was extremely important, and he did very well.
Just so it's not lost, this patient actually had access to two minimally invasive options. He had a laparoscopic guided attempted polypectomy to try to reduce the risk of an endoscopic procedure, which we typically do with colonoscopy, to avoid the risk of perforation with that procedure on the right side of the colon. And then when he subsequently recurred with his polyp, then he was offered a formal resection, again by laparoscopic techniques.
Well, we heard from Boyce about what he looked for in a surgeon.
I asked Dr. Ramamoorthy, are you comfortable doing this procedure on me? And she said, absolutely. How many have you done? I have done hundreds of these. And what is the incident rate of complications?
Dr. Ramamoorthy?
So the risk of complications that we discussed with Boyce ranges from serious complications, which is what we call an anastomotic leak, or a very serious infection where we've sewn the two ends of the bowel together. In some cases, the patient just requires a longer hospitalization with IV antibiotics, but in some cases, that risk may require a temporary colostomy. So I usually quote patients somewhere between 2 and 5% for a very healthy patient. The other complications that can happen at a much higher rate are in particular wound infections, because we're dealing with colon coming through the abdominal wall. So there's a risk there for contamination. So as long as a patient is really understands that the risks essentially are about the same for laparoscopic and open surgery, because we are doing the same operation, it goes back to what Tony was saying, it's the access that's different. They're really well informed when they go into the procedure. I think where they truly benefit from laparoscopy is, again, the pain, the size of the incision, and maybe some of the long-term risks, such as hernias and bowel obstructions from scar tissue that develops as a result of surgery.
What else should physicians consider before recommending laparoscopic surgery for colon cancer?
I think there's a couple of issues to understand. First, this clearly takes a skilled team that's well-trained to perform the laparoscopic procedure. So a certain minimum volume to guarantee that training is important. Then the second thing I think to understand is this is just as effective a therapy surgically as an open procedure, with all of the benefits of an earlier recovery, lower physiologic stress that accrue to the patient.
You know, I think from the non-surgical perspective, we want to raise the option of laparoscopic surgery. I think it's an important message to say that this, if we can do it, is going to be great in terms of outcomes. There are some patient factors. For example, the patients that's had, you know, a number of previous surgeries is going to have a lot of adhesions, may be more likely to require conversion to an open operation. So we don't want to make, as a medical person, promises about it. But I think, as has already been stated, we want to identify the laparoscopic surgeons that are experienced, have several of them in our arsenal in case one's out of town that we can refer patients to. So the key thing is identifying the experienced laparoscopic surgeon.
So given this information, why aren't all patients who qualify for laparoscopic surgery having it?
Well, I think it's a problem with the knowledge base out there. I think we really have to get the word out that many of the colorectal diseases that we treat, they can be approached laparoscopically. And it's important for the primary care physicians to find out who the expert is in their community so that they can refer those patients who might be good candidates for this procedure.
I think it's important to look at the literature. It's the rate of application of laparoscopic techniques for colorectal disease probably range from 2 to maybe as high as 30%, depending on which database you look at. But clearly, it's not the predominant form of therapy that's being applied. And again, I think it's primarily a training issue. This is a relatively new technical approach. There were some concerns early on about the ability to perform cancer surgery with these skills. And then surgeons have to learn to apply these within their team and within their own practice. So it is more widely available than it was maybe 3 to 5 years ago. But still, it's important for the physician to know what resources they have available within their region so that they can refer appropriately.
Yeah, I think it's an awareness issue, and that's part of the purpose of talking about it is to increase awareness. Obviously, we need more surgeons who are trained, but I think at this stage, across the country, we've got centers that are widespread enough where laparoscopic surgery is available that all of us should be figuring out who is around that is an expert in laparoscopic surgery.
I mean, there are patients that are clearly not candidates for laparoscopy, but they're a relatively small percentage. Patients who have had multiple operations on their abdominal cavity previously will likely have too much scar tissue to allow completion of a laparoscopic operation. Patients with large tumors or large phlegmon disease from Crohn's disease, again, have large masses that need to be removed. They can't be brought out through a small incision. So, again, there is some surgical judgment about when it should be applied, but it's a relatively small percentage of patients now that are clearly not candidates for laparoscopy.
Well, we've covered a lot today. We've talked about surgical options in inflammatory bowel disease, diverticulitis, and colorectal cancer, and discussed some of the ways to minimize invasiveness while maximizing positive outcomes. Doctors, how would you summarize the discussion today? What are the key take-home points?
Well, I think that, we've sort of learned that the laparoscopic approach offers clear advantages for all three of the disorders that we've talked about. It's not going to work for everybody, but in appropriately selected patients, it offers the opportunity for a shorter stay in the hospital, more quick recovery back to normal. And from a medical standpoint, we're using basically the same approaches that we would otherwise. But in certain instances, an example was the patient with the large sessile polyp, for example, we might actually lean more toward the laparoscopic approach because of this reduced rate of being in the hospital, shorter stays, and so on. So I think that from a medical perspective, as a gastroenterologist who refers patients to surgeons, we definitely have been delighted with the availability of laparoscopic surgery, and we're definitely thinking about the laparoscopic approach when our patients need surgery.
I would say, as a message to deliver to primary care providers and patients, that minimal invasive approaches can be applied to any spectrum of diseases. And it's beneficial to find out who the physicians are in your community who can perform this service and find out if your patients are candidate for this, because this is someone you're going to follow for a long time, and limiting the morbidity or complications, both short-term and long-term, from surgery is in everyone's best interest.
I would agree. I think two other key points. One, for both inflammatory bowel disease and diverticulitis, the concept of true interdisciplinary management really needs to be advocated for. It's the appropriate decision for either medical or surgical intervention that needs to be applied in a given patient. And then also to understand where is the skilled team, where is the skilled surgeon that can perform these operations safely and effectively.
Thank you all for participating in this important discussion. And I'd like to thank our viewers, and I hope today's conversation will help you make the best decisions for your patients who are candidates for colon surgery. Also, I encourage each of you to go to your computer, log on to discoveryhealthcme.com, and take the post-test. It only takes a few minutes to earn free credit for this program. And if you'd like to see the program again, you can watch it online, download a podcast, or order a DVD. The graphics and references from the program are also available online. Finally, I'd like to thank the University of Virginia School of Medicine for accrediting the program, and I'd like to thank Ethicon Endosurgery for the educational grant that made this program possible. Until next time, I'm Maria Blakey for Discovery Health CME.